On this episode of Finding Christ in Cinema, we get to the Black Gate of Mordor, only to be caught by Faramir as we look for Christian themes in The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Why does Samwise change his mind about Sméagol? Is it because Frodo is the new Christ figure? All that and more in 3, 2, 1... Come on in, admission is free. Grab a bowl of popcorn, extra butter, of course, and find a seat smack dab in the middle. It's time for Finding Christ in Cinema, episode number 41. I'm Michael.
And I'm Brendan.
Join us, and together we'll dig deeper into the silver screen classics of yesteryear, as well as the box office hits of today. We'll take a closer look at the stories they tell and see if we find the face of Jesus looking back. We're going to explore the deeper meanings of these films, their plots and their twists, the characters and their choices, and how we can relate them to the gospel of salvation and ultimately our Christian walk. You are tuned in to Finding Christ in Cinema on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Brendan, I am scared today.
Why?
Because we are operating under a completely brand new setup and system here. All because of this little device.
What little device, Michael?
Well, Brendan, it's the brand new Tascam DR05 that we were finally able to add to the audio chain here in the studio.
Well, Michael, what does a camera have to do with audio?
No. This is a digital recorder.
Oh, you said Tascam, and I thought you meant cam as in camera.
No, Brendan. No. You know what? You get a big... Right off the bat, at the top of the show, you know what? We have a brand new patron saint. Patron saint of the GCT Network. Now, you know what? I didn't get a note from the person when they sent in this donation, and so I don't want to give out a full name in case, you know, some people like to remain anonymous, and so I can at least give out a big shout-out to a brand new patron saint, Philip. Because nobody will know who I'm talking about.
Well, Philip will know.
And thank you so much, Philip, because that donation allowed us to purchase this brand new digital recorder that we've been talking about for 5 or 6 months now. And what that is allowing us to do, not only are we taking the recording process out of the computer. So let's say we're recording a show and the power goes out, lose everything. Mm-hmm. This way, if something happens, this thing's still recording. We can salvage whatever we want, you know, or maybe the computer just freezes. Everything else is working fine, you know, the soundboard, and I have the sound cart coming through the iPad and whatnot. But this just takes the all the weight off of the computer and puts it on a dedicated digital recorder. But the real benefit of having this bad boy is the pass-through capacity, the capabilities.
But I thought Gandalf said we can't pass.
Oh, my goodness.
Inconceivable.
You know what? No, you know what? I
You are a sad, strange little man.
But Gandalf said it when he was fighting the Balrog.
No more puns. It's not punny.
You know what? I will have to tell you about the pun competition that I entered earlier.
Oh, okay.
So, but we'll talk about that later.
Let me just finish this up real quick. One of the benefits is passing the audio through. So now, if you are watching on our live video or listening to our audio now, we're broadcasting right now on our Mixlr channel, but everything is going through gctnetwork.com/live. That page has audio, has video, and has our chat room embedded in there. But the sound should be vastly improved over what it once was. So if you want to join us here on Thursday afternoons at about 3 o'clock p.m. Central Time, the website is gctnetwork.com/live.
Speaking of live, David's in the chat room right now. So
hey, David, type in there. Tell us how it sounds coming through on the video or if you're on the audio or what have you. I'm still working to dial in everything. Because it is working in the dark, getting the sound coming out of here. And I'm working on this crummy little laptop, this old laptop over here, trying to get the audio going. It's just, it could be better. But right now, because of the generosity of patron saint Philip, We are
Felipe.
Hey, you know what? Here's the neat thing. We all know. Well, Philip knows what his name means. Do you know what it means?
No.
It's a Greek name, Brendan.
Ah, do tell.
And it is basically would be translated fond of horses, Philip. Fond of horses.
Really?
Now, one thing that was, well, it's from a compound of, well, philos, right?
Okay, yeah.
Brotherly love. Something, love. Somebody that's dear
well,
philia, to
you. Just love. Yeah. Yeah, just like you said.
But it's a brotherly love.
Yeah.
You know, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love.
It's yeah.
So it has the connotation of being dear to you or loved by you. But anyway, in ancient Greece, the ownership of horses was available only to those rich enough to afford them. Thus, lover of horses or fond of horses can also be understood as noble. Okay,
oh.
Now, why would I bring that all up, Brendan?
I don't know.
Because in just a few minutes here, we are going to meet for the first time in this film the riders of Rohan, the Rohirrim, which are the horse lords.
Okay.
And so it just works out the way that the good Lord ties everything together. Here we are talking about a movie today where the Rohirrim, the horse lords, are introduced, and lo and behold, Philip, fond of horses, the brand new patron saint of the Great Commission Transmission
Now,
Network.
It also sounds like onomatopoeia, because think about it.
You know,
gallop, that's an
Wait, say that again.
Gallop.
No, the first word.
Onomatopoeia.
Potatoes.
No. Onomatopoeia.
Potatoes.
No. Onomatopoeia.
Potatoes.
Okay, it sounds like that's where we get the phrase gallop, because that's the sound that the hoof makes
as it's
galloping on a field. Well, what if some Greek guy's like, that horse is philipping over there. Do you hear that? That philipping?
Told you he was tricksy. Potatoes.
All right, whatever.
Anyway, that's first big update for this week. What do you got?
Well, first of all, I'm back at it at the fly.
Oh!
We're starting up the new play.
Well, you don't mess around.
I don't.
Take a couple weeks of breather and...
Hey,
that's
what it is. Assistant director and stage manager once again. This time we're doing Blithe Spirit by Noel Coward. It's a nifty little play. I haven't really decided what it's about yet.
Wait, did you say Blithe?
Blithe.
Danner? Blithe Danner?
No, Michael.
By for dinner?
No. No.
Wait, say it again.
Don't,
I'm sorry.
Don't dress I was Blithe as, Danner I'm, for Spirit.
I was
dinner.
Admiring the brand new Tascam DR05.
Okay, no. Blithe Spirit by Noel Coward.
Okay.
Okay, and this past week we had our first read-through, which is always fun, and next week we start rehearsal.
Is this another adult play?
Yes. This is another. That's another word for you. This is another adult play. Michael already told you we don't do our kids' plays until the summer.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay, well, what else is going on?
Well, I did go to the movies this week.
What'd you see?
Selma.
Selma. Mm-hmm. Selmanilla.
No, that's
what
quite,
is what's Selma? I'm not familiar with that.
Quite different.
Oh, okay. Well, good.
Selma is the story of the events that took place on the
Lee Pace, Frandrel?
Ronan the Accuser. No, Selma is the story of what took place on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, in 1965.
All right.
It's that story. It's got David. I can never say his name right. David Oyelowo, or something like that. British actor, but he's playing Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh,
And he's pretty good. And I talk about his acting. Talk about the story a little bit in the Monday movie review, which came out this morning.
Awesome. Get over to ChristianCinema.com and read that and all of Brendan's Monday movie reviews. What else?
Just a short note, because I want to save the Hobbit news for last.
Okay.
Because I've got a little bit further in the Hobbit. We'll talk about that. But just really quickly, next Sunday I'll be speaking at Horse Mountain Church Christ.
Oh, good.
Doing their evening service.
Ah, nice. I like their glass stained glass or whatever that is on the outside. Have you ever been to their building?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
The colored glass and stuff. Reminds me of the Brady Bunch.
I wouldn't go that far.
No?
No. I didn't like the Brady Bunch.
What are you going to talk on?
So, I'm going to talk on the Holy Spirit.
Oh.
And kind of how the evangelical quote unquote church has kind of glazed over it.
Yes.
Because we're all more about.
We don't understand the Holy Spirit.
The way I kind of understand it is like the, I don't know what they're called, like the Episcopal Church, you know, the stuff like the early Protestant Church. They're all about God the Father.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got the evangelical churches like Southern Baptist, the Church of Christ, we're all about God the Son. And then you got the Charismatic,
yes,
which are all about the Spirit.
And Pentecostals.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this whole, I hate to say it, but division in the church over which is more important. And I kind of want to tackle the Holy Spirit because I feel like, if anything, that's what we evangelicals have glazed over the most.
Yeah. You know, I agree with you 100%. I have a tip for you.
Oh, no.
The Theonauts podcast.
Yeah, that's what I've been listening to. Yes. And David, I'm taking your Pneuma point.
Yes.
That's going to be one of the big points.
I heard one of the greatest sermons on the Holy Spirit, and especially the wind of the Holy Spirit.
Yes.
Out in California at Canyon Church several years ago, that will always stick with me. And it was using the illustration of a small sailboat. Out in the middle of the sea, and it was a great illustration to illustrate how the Spirit works, and neat stuff. Cool. Well, we're looking forward to hearing more about that after the fact, I guess.
David, I'm not getting your comment in the chat room. I'm not getting what that means.
Hey,
anyway,
saw a movie this week.
What did you see?
We watched The Giver.
Okay.
And
do tell.
It was awesome. That movie, I don't know what you're talking about. That movie was awesome.
Michael, did you read the book?
No.
Of course not.
No.
See, this is why I like the Hobbit movie so much before I read the book, because I hadn't read the book.
No. Well, now, wait a second, because Shelley read all the books. She's read all the Giver books.
Okay.
She knows the whole entire story. And she afterwards said, that movie was great. Yeah, they changed some things, but they had to, in order to progress this along. Well, at least that's what I understood her saying.
Did they
all
have
the kids,
to?
Everybody else in my family, huh?
Did they have to change it?
Well, I don't know. I didn't read the book. You'll have to. She's downstairs, so if you want me to call her up here?
No, it's okay.
I've been trying to get her to come on the show. No! but anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. I thought that it blows. So here's the difference. I didn't read that book. I watched the movie. I read Divergent, didn't see the movie.
Okay.
This movie blows the Divergent book out of the water. It out of the water.
That I can agree with.
Yeah. That. In fact, now that, and I, honey, if you're listening to this on the podcast, turn this down here for a couple of seconds. I think that Divergent stuff stinks. That's terrible writing. Terrible. Anyway, I thought I liked the first book. I thought I did. But then I see, you know, now I'm watching these other, what are they called?
Young adult dystopian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Hunger Games is the king of it. I think.
Yeah, sure.
As far as the movies go. I mean, that's just on a different plane. So let's take that out of the mix. So I watched, what did I watch?
The Giver?
Maze
Runner.
And Maze Runner.
Yeah.
So far those two. And I liked Maze Runner. I guess I need to see the Divergent movie. But you would think that the book would be better than the movie. And so I don't expect to be more impressed with that film than I was with the Giver film. I thought Jeff Bridges, I love Jeff Bridges. What did you think of his performance in that?
Well, Jeff Bridges was one of the shining notes in that movie.
He's a phenomenal actor. I thoroughly enjoy him.
And honestly, I thought Meryl Streep was too.
How about
Brandon Thwaites?
Well, he's the protagonist.
Yeah, he's Jonas.
What'd you think of him? I mean, of course, he's older than Jonas in the book.
Yeah, that's. But you know, for what the writer and the director gave him, I thought he did it extremely well.
What is your biggest number one complaint about that film?
Well, just like you said, the Jonas character is at a different age than he is in the book. And
they throw in the love interest.
Yeah, and they throw in the love interest. But they did that, I think, just to tie in with the fact that he's older. And, you know, like I said, in whatever episode we talked about.
What about
this,
his ability to portray the magnitude of receiving these gifts, these memories?
Yeah, are you talking about from Brandon's performance or from Jonas's character?
No, from his performance.
He, like I said, he did well with it.
Yeah.
It would have been better, though, if it was a 13-year-old kid doing the same thing. That would have been more impactful. That's my opinion. Can't really prove it.
Well, now, my wife said something that seemed to make a lot of sense to me, and hopefully that I am paraphrasing her correctly, and that is that him being a little bit older makes those receiving those memories and understanding emotion that much more poignant. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, that might depend on the audience you're trying to reach to. Then again, when I was reading The Giver the first time back in school, I was practically his age.
Okay, let me ask you this question. Is that the last time you read the book? At that age?
Yes, it is.
Okay, see?
Okay, oh.
So that might have a little bit of... I don't know, I need to read the book.
I need to reread it so we can actually have this conversation. Yes.
In fact, let's put this on the list. Let's get to this movie soon. I know that, you know, from your point of view, because it was a beloved book, but I watched this movie, and that movie was awesome, great. You know, of course, all these movies totally draw on George Orwell in 1984. Well, I mean, it is just total, but it's I'm actually enjoying seeing their interpretation of it. And I think the whole black and white and then the tastes of color and the color was
that is cool.
It was profound. So anyway, I am glad that I saw the movie. I give it 2 thumbs up. If you haven't seen it, watch it. And who do you agree with more? Brendan, who is obviously the more subtle and the more erudite of the two, or me, the one that just bouncing off my medicine ball here, or whatever you call this exercise ball. What else, Brendan? Anything else going on?
Oh, right now I'm looking up erudite.
Hey, that
you mean erudite?
Yeah.
Okay. Showing great knowledge or learning. Thank you, Michael. Yes. What a guy. What there a swell go. Guy.
And that's from Divergent.
So, as I said, I'm getting further along in The Hobbit.
Yeah. Where are you?
And just as I was pulling up to your driveway, Gandalf had left the dwarves and Bilbo at the edge of Mirkwood
Forest. Oh, that's where it should have been a 2-part movie, and that's where it should have ended.
Yeah. And I can so
I'm on
that.
Record for saying that. I said that on a podcast years ago. Ron of the Red Oaks knows it.
He can testify.
Yes.
But, okay, so I will say that I didn't really notice. Here are the differences I've noticed between
the book. Oh, my gosh. Okay, how long is this show going to be?
Okay, first of all, and this is only first listening for this part of the book.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, it is by Rob Inglis.
Yes.
It is that
copy. And he does the Lord of the Rings trilogy. You will be in love.
Okay. All right. Okay. So done. Homework for the rest of the year.
Yes.
Got it. First of all, Azog. But you know what? I don't miss him.
Well, good. Because he's not supposed to be there.
Yeah, exactly. He's not supposed to. I don't care. Okay. Second of all. Oh, actually, no. That's related because Azog wasn't the reason why the dwarves climbed up in the trees.
Right.
It was just because of the wolves.
Right.
Because the wolves were...
And those wolves talked.
They talked. And that was awesome.
Yes.
And they were planning to meet with the goblins, right?
Yep.
They were going to raid the next town.
Yeah.
Okay. That would have been awesome in the movie.
Yep. That's out of the fire into the frying pan. I mean, out of the frying pan into the fire.
You mean out of the goblins and into the wolves, which I hear has become a proverb in that part of the world.
Yes.
And then the Lord of the Eagles.
Yeah. Oh.
That whole scene with the eagles.
Oh, man. And they talk and take them up to their eyries.
Yes.
Or however you say that word.
And not just because Gandalf called them, like he, you know, to a little butterfly.
Yep. Because they're watching.
Yeah, they're up there watching the whole time. Let's see, what else? The whole scene with Beorn.
Bjorn and his whole house, and how they get into his house and say, Gettle says, hey, okay, let's, whoa, we can't just bum rush this guy. He's going
like,
to kill
us. Come in two at a time, 5 minutes apart. And, you know, with the, in the movie, they all sneak in and then yeah. Oh, there's this
yeah.
big.
It's just not right. And plus, I also love, for some reason, it just has always stuck with me ever since a little kid, you know, his height and you know, Bilbo being able to walk underneath the hem of his skirt.
Bjorn's height?
Yes. Yeah. And then how magical inside of his house is.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's, that is such an important scene to me.
And that could have been so well done in the movie.
What about, but let's go back a little bit. Let's go back to Imladris. Let's go back to going down the valley into making their way to the last homely house and the elves. And you know, I was doing shows about Middle Earth at the time, long before, you know, the movies came out, but we knew that they were in production. We were all saying, hey, those elves had better be singing tra-la-la-lally here down in the valley, you know, and it could have been done. It could have been done.
It could have been beautifully done.
Yeah.
Yep. To Peter Jackson caliber, it could have been done.
Yes.
But it wasn't.
Yep.
Oh, man. So now I have a feeling you're sting. As you watch these films, I'm feeling what you're feeling.
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't that be in the movie?
Well, because you know, you are experiencing all these very magical things. And it's like my son Micah says. He says, you know what? I honestly like The Hobbit better than The Lord of the Rings because of it feels more of a fantasy. And you know, we like that escapism. And, you know, everything along the line in the story that you have read so far is fantastic, fantastical. But when you get now, you're about to go into Mirkwood.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to talk about it next week.
I'll be listening to that.
It's our new this is our new segment on the show.
Oh, great.
I love it. Oh, goodness. Anything else before we move on?
No, I think we covered it.
Okay.
Michael, what do you say? Let's
You want to go to the movies?
Let's go to the movies.
Okay, I'm game.
The fate of the world will soon be decided. The dominion of evil grows even stronger. There is a union now between the two towers. Barad-dûr, fortress of the Dark Lord Sauron, and Orthanc, stronghold of the wizard Saruman. The peril of the Ringbearer deepens. An unseen danger draws closer. For there is another who hunts the ring.
The thieves! They stole my precious, and we want it!
Back to you now, at the turn of the tide.
Brendan, this is the first time that you have watched The Two Towers?
The first time that I've watched it with the right
mindset.
Yes.
Okay, and what are your initial impressions?
Okay, first of all, I just want to get it out of the way. A point that I made last week about things sometimes feeling like they're too drawn out and too...
You're going to harp on that again?
Yes, but I found out why.
Boo! Boo!
I'm gonna tell you why, Michael.
Okay.
With no interruptions from old hag women.
Okay.
Okay. The story of the film, I think, is too divided.
And when this one film?
Well, no, it started in Fellowship.
Okay.
It started at the end of Fellowship after the encounter with the Balrog. Of course, that's when everybody splits up.
Do you mean the breaking of the Fellowship?
Yes.
And therefore the break tearing asunder of this whole story arc and people going into different directions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Because so many points in the movie, there are times when there's a buildup to a certain, not necessarily climax, but to a next plot point.
Uh-huh.
There's that buildup, but then right before it happens, switch to the next scene.
You may not like the books then, son.
If that's the way of the books, I'll still read them. Michael, I will still read them.
Okay.
But I may have to do some kicking and screaming along the way.
Okay, well, we'll discuss it as we go along. But
that's just okay. Bring it into focus.
All right, focus.
My palette for story is more tuned into Aristotle's, where he had the three unities, where there was a singular place, a singular time, and a singular plot. That's the way I like to consume my stories.
All right.
And it's hard to do that in The Lord of the Rings.
Well, wait till we get to the end, and then we'll see if you can find a singular, that singularity.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Now, right now, I understand we're on the journey to Mordor. I get that. I so get it. It's all good. Yeah, I had to watch the film multiple times.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, one viewing would be just to watch Gimli, Legolas, and Aragorn and their venture.
Uh-huh.
And then rewind, and then watch Frodo, Smeagol, and Samwise. You know, and then, like, you know, skipping parts. Mm-hmm. And then watch
Merry and Pippin.
And Treebeard. With the Ents. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. That's how I had to watch it to really grasp what was going on.
Wow.
So.
Well, you may... There's a little bit of a disadvantage for those who haven't read the books. Okay. And so, you know, seeing it from that vantage point, then all I'm doing is watching going, why do you leave out this? Why do you leave out that? Oh my goodness, all this stuff. But let me tell you one thing. Watching this movie again, I think that, and please don't get me wrong, the Lord of the Rings trilogy is near perfection.
Okay. The books. Or the movies.
No, I'm talking about movies.
You're talking about the movies.
You know,
okay.
This is a movie podcast. So with the exception of, you know, leaving out all kinds of stuff, which is sinful. Missed the mark. Anyway.
Show me a man who hasn't.
Exactly. It's near perfection. Let me throw something out here and see your reaction to this. Oh, my goodness. This is such a beautiful movie.
David in the chat wing.
The emotion in this one movie, just the two towers, absolutely trumps the entire Hobbit series.
Oh.
Absolutely trumps. There's not even comparison. Okay. In fact, the claims that people are making saying, you know, Peter Jackson is just doing his version of Peter Jackson with this new trilogy. Although I think that's a mean thing to say, I kind of almost believe it. Without going through every scene and every... I mean, oh my goodness. Theoden. Okay, first of all, have you pulled up IMDb? Pull up IMDb.
We got to go through this
because I've been watching the whole past week, and much like you, because it's a long movie, and having to take it in stops and starts. And bless you, sir.
Hey, thank you.
You know, there is a lot to take in, but this morning I wake up to watch as much. You know, I'm trying to finish it before the show starts. I already knew what I was going to talk about, but I just want to make sure I didn't leave anything else out at the end. And I get to the whole in Helm's Deep with Aragorn fretting. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? There's 300 of us.
He's a good. He's a good brooder. Aragorn.
Oh, yeah.
He likes to brood.
Well, it's great great acting. Bernard Hill, his... When he came and said, what would you have me do? you know, what would you have me tell these guys? If they're going to fight, I would have them make such an end, you know, that stories will be told about them.
Yeah.
And it was inspiring, and it was moving, and it was emotional. And that's just one particular point in the film. Phenomenal acting.
Now that's where you're talking about, where they're inside Helm's Deep.
Yes, and the army is coming. 10,000.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're inside. They just had to retreat from the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I know what you're talking about now.
All I'm saying is that his acting was just superb, perfect, impeccable. Along with everybody else in this film, the trilogy was cast so perfectly. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, we could go on, but let's get back to initial impressions on this. So that's my contention. This one film trumps the entire Hobbit trilogy. I'm just throwing that out there, and I'm going to stand by it.
All right.
What are your reactions to that?
I'm going to have to heavily consider that.
Okay, you consider that. We'll talk more about that at another time. What else about the film?
Well, first of all, I got to talk about Howard Shore and his beautiful soundtrack.
Oh, genius.
Yeah. And again, this time, even better. I can't remember when exactly the scene was. I just remember Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli. It was just after they had met Gandalf. Gandalf. And, you know, as he revealed himself to be the new White Wizard. And they... It may have been even after they saved Theoden from Saruman's possession or whatever.
Wormtongue, Grima Wormtongue.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah,
yeah, and they were just riding off into the distance, and I could hear the usual Lord of the Rings theme,
mm-hmm.
but then there's just so much more to it.
Yeah,
and then visually, the sun was setting; it was like a pink sky. This film is up on the spectacle. I'm just going to tell you.
It's what?
It's up
yeah.
on the spectacle.
Ah, okay. Okay. You mean eye candy?
Spectacle as it, well, eye candy, sensory candy.
Yeah. 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 Well, they say that New Zealand was a major character in the cast, or a major actor in the cast. Absolutely beautiful. Okay. What'd you think of Treebeard? Fangorn.
He was all right for the scenes on the sitting that I watched him in.
Yeah, he's so much better in the book.
I bet. He seemed like a witty guy.
Yeah, the whole thing. You learn so much about Middle-earth through Fang. Well, he is Fangorn. Yeah. Fangorn Forest is his.
He's the shepherd of the trees.
Right, right.
So, I really liked it. I thought with him, I could see... like I said, as witty and as quick as he was also downbeaten because he's tired of fighting with the orcs and the goblins because all they do is burn his forests.
Yeah.
And I could really see that.
Well, again, we're not on anybody's side because nobody's on our side.
Right. Exactly. He's almost lukewarm.
Well, goodness, so much backstory. Woo! About the Ents that I can't wait till you get to in the books. Okay, before we move on, is there anything that you really wanted to, you know, hey, this is a highlight for me. This really struck me, or maybe something like, man, that stunk.
Highlight is Samwise's monologue at the end.
Okay,
these are the stories we tell.
Yeah,
that monologue, or it's technically not a monologue because there's one point where someone else speaks, but still, that scene and guys. Fellow listeners and fellow Lord of the Rings fans, I'm just going to tell you, I cried.
Hey, good.
I cried.
You're supposed to.
Yeah. That's just, like, I couldn't help it. I had to pause the movie and just wipe away.
Well, I I don't know what it is. I wish that, you know, it's ineffable, really. You can't be put into words, but people that are moved by art, you're moved by art. I mean, there's just, you know, what are you going to say? I mean, it's the human condition, really, and isn't that empathy, and doesn't that help in evangelizing? Doesn't that help in fulfilling the Great Commission?
Yeah.
If you are moved by humanity, if you are moved by fellow humans. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking this may seem way off base and may seem like a total rabbit trail, but I've been thinking about this all week long, and it's just something that's been weighing heavy on me. See if you can see how this fits into it, this, Brendan.
Okay.
I was in a Bible study. This was, I don't know, a couple years ago or so, years ago, we'll just say that. And the person that was leading this class was telling a story about a somebody that was in jail, and their prison ministry, their jailhouse ministry, helped this person lead them to Christ. They got out of jail and served their time. Everything was, you know, above the board. We're even now. Goes back out into the world and nobody will hire him. Okay, can't get a job. And eventually had to resort to selling drugs in order to make some money to live. And they got caught and went back to jail. That may have been the goal. A lot of people do that. Hey, yeah. I'm better off behind bars. I get to eat and I have a place to sleep. Mm-hmm. Nobody's hiring me.
Roof over the head. And
I paid my debt, but they don't see it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. To them, the debt will never be paid. They aren't going to hire me. And a comment was made. Oh, well, that person lost their faith. Okay. And then we moved on. Okay. Next subject. And what has been weighing on me is, why didn't I put up my hand? Or somebody put up their hand and say, wait, whoa, isn't this more, or isn't this a louder indictment on the church?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where was the church when he couldn't get hired? Where was the person in the local body saying, I have a job for you? Man, I need somebody. And your debt's paid. So come on over. Where was that person? No. We don't want you selling drugs. We don't even want you to do, even if you're trying to go back to jail, we don't want you back there. We want you with us. And we're going to find application for that in conversation that we're about to launch into.
Yeah, we are.
In fact, we find application for that in many of the conversations that we launch into, huh, Brendan? Take it away, good sir.
So, wow, that's like a really good little setup you got me. So, talking about... really no other way to put it, meeting people halfway.
Ah!
Talking about Frodo, Samwise, and Smeagol. Hold on, I got to read David's comment. David, you're killing me. hold on, what's Aragorn's deal? I mean, Arwen, no contest there. Who wants a doe-eyed whisperer over that Spitfire warrior, babe?
Oh. What?
David, ruin the momentum.
It's the fulfillment of Beren and Luthien.
Okay, first of all, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, that's sad.
Second of all, back to Frodo, Samwise, Smeagol, and meeting others halfway. And this is something that we as evangelists, whatever we are.
Yeah, we're evangelists.
whatever emphasis on the wrong syllable we can put.
Hey, go back to... Pilgrim's Progress. We better be evangelists.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not no worldly wise man.
No.
Anyway, so let's look at this. There's a couple scenes here, and we'll see an example of first Frodo wanting to meet Smeagol halfway, and then a transformation in another character, Samwise, and how that transformation helps him meet Gollum halfway. Meet Smeagol halfway, whoever you want to call him. You want to call him Gollum? Call him Gollum. You want to Beagle Smeagol? Beagle Smeagol. So the first scene, Smeagol has just promised to take Frodo and Samwise to the Black Gate. And on the way there, Samwise starts antagonizing Smeagol and calling him names, making fun of him. Frodo, however, steps up and says, hey, whoa, hey. You don't need to be doing that.
Why do you do that? Call them names. Run them down all the time. Because that's what he is, Mr. Frodo. There's not left in him but lies and deceit. It's the ring he wants. It's all he cares about. You have no idea what it did to him. What it's still doing to him. I want to help him, Sam. Why?
I have to believe he can come back.
Mm-hmm.
Man, okay.
Well, why does he have to believe that he can come back?
Well, honestly, that could be because Frodo wants to believe that he himself can come back.
Exactly.
Because he's affected by the same sickness, mm-hmm. the same spell, whatever, enchantment, whatever you want to call it. He's affected by that same sickness from the ring.
Yes.
It's just that Smeagol, and I love that we get some Smeagol backstory, because Smeagol actually, it's revealed that he's a hole dweller who lived by the river.
Yes, he was part of the river folk.
River folk, yeah. Yeah. We get that backstory, and it almost sets it up like Smeagol is a type of hobbit.
Well, in reality, he is.
Okay, he is.
Yeah.
It's just that over time, after 2,000 years, is that right, of living with the ring?
Oh, no.
Was it 2,000 years?
He's been, I think he's like 500 years or something, but okay. A long, long time.
But yeah, so a long, long time, and we can see the effects of the ring and what they've had on Smeagol. We can see that, and we can also see Samwise's disdain for that. We can see his, you can call it disappointment, all these disses. You can just see that. And that's why Samwise is giving them such a hard time. Frodo, however, because he's sharing in that affliction, he can see where Gollum still has hope, where Smeagol still has hope.
Right. Right.
Now, fast forward.
Okay.
To this beautiful monologue, which I talked about earlier. That was rewind.
But that time it was forward.
Okay, hold on. Brain melt. Anyway, okay, so fast forward.
Okay.
Samwise has just saved Frodo from the Ring Wraith. And, you know, there's this whole scene where Frodo is so enchanted by the ring that he sees Samwise as an enemy, draws his sword, has it at his neck, the same way Frodo had his sword at Gollum's neck when Gollum had Samwise in the chokehold earlier in the film. But, you know, of course, Samwise says, "Don't you know me? I'm your Samwise."
Yes, I'm your Sam.
Don't you know you're Samwise?
Mr.
Or your
Frodo.
Sam? Oh, Mr. Frodo. Mr. Frodo, why are you going to do that? Anyway, this is where he delivers his speech, and at first he talks about the way he used to see the world, but now he sees something different.
But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going because they were holding on to something. What are we holding on to, Sam? But there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo. And it's worth fighting for.
Ah. Oh, man. See, like, even right now, that wasn't even the whole speech, and I'm already getting...
Yes. Yes.
I got the vapors. I got the vapors. So anyway, Samwise now sees the world as worthy of meeting halfway, and I love the scene in the film. We can't really show it audibly. We can't really show it audibly, but as he's giving that speech, and we can pull up the words right here. After Frodo says, "What are we holding on to, Sam?" There's a scene, there's a quick shot of Gollum, and then it goes back to Sam. It goes from Frodo to Sam, and then Sam looks in another direction, and then the camera pans over to Gollum, and then it goes back to Sam. To me, that implies that Sam now sees the world, as exemplified by Gollum, as worthy of being saved.
Ah.
And worthy of meeting halfway. And that is the point I want to bring out right now.
I love it.
Because that is what Jesus was all about. And we're going to, and actually, I was mulling about this. I didn't know if I wanted to use it, but you know what? We are. In John 21, after the resurrection, after Jesus is appearing to the disciples, we're going to look at Peter. we're going to see Peter's restoration the same way we see Samwise. Jesus says, look, Peter, do you love me?
Yeah.
Peter says, I do, Lord. But he answers it in a, and I'm quoting the NET, the New English.
Yay! They don't say anything.
There they are. They got to come out sometime. He says he was distressed in his answer. That's because Jesus wasn't just saying, do you love me? Jesus was saying, do you love me in the hold on.
Was that phileo?
It's a, well, I don't know if it was phileo.
Because he switched. He kept switching, and then he ends up with agape.
Yeah, he ends up with agape.
Yeah.
That's right. Phileo is the first two terms.
Yeah.
Jesus says, do you love me like a brother?
Uh-huh.
And will you follow me?
Are you fond of me?
Yeah.
Are we brothers?
Yes. And Peter's hesitant. He still says yes.
Yeah.
But deep down, he can feel his own struggle, and Jesus can feel that same struggle, because Jesus actually had the ability to know people's hearts.
Yeah. That's a benefit of being Jesus.
Yeah. if you're ever Jesus, you should try it.
Once you sometime when you create a universe.
Yeah, you can tell us how it is. So then he asked him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And again, that's philia, whatever you want to call it. And Simon says, yes. And Jesus says, all right, shepherd my sheep. Jesus realized that Simon's not ready yet to accept that kind of love. So Jesus changes his question. He still says, do you love me? But
he said agape. Isn't that how it worked? Now I have to look it up.
Oh, now
he started off with agape, and then he's okay, you know what, I'll meet you halfway. Do you love me as a brother?
That might be it, actually.
That's how that worked out.
Do
you agapeo me?
Now we need a mulligan.
Okay, mulligan. That time it was rewinding.
Yeah, okay, this time it's rewinding, the way it should be.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so the first two times Jesus asks Peter, do you love me, in the agape way, which is the way, I guess that's the sacrificial way that we're called to, right?
Right. That's the I'll do whatever is best for you.
Yeah.
You know, what's in your best interest. It's the highest form. It's the way that God loves.
And then Peter distresses, and that might even be the philipsis word.
Oh, he's in between a rock and a hard place.
Yes.
Yes.
Peter doesn't know. He's so unsure. He's so shaken that he doesn't really know what type of yes he wants to give. He just says yes.
Yeah.
And then Jesus changes his question into phileo.
Yeah.
Do you love me like a brother?
Yeah.
And Peter can firmly say, yes, I do.
Yeah. You know I do.
And that's Jesus meeting Peter halfway. And Jesus met people halfway all the time.
Oh, and goodness. He goes further than halfway, Brendan.
Because he does. He goes all the way. He goes all the way down into death.
He condescends himself completely. Whew,
man, and that's the point I want to bring up, is that once we start seeing the world as worthy of being saved, and all the people in it worthy of being saved,
amen,
resurrected in the end,
amen,
once we start seeing people like that, we can then operate.
Once we get Christ back into Christians, then Christians will see as Christ sees.
Ooh, man.
How about that?
I don't know what to tell you. You got it.
Okay, because going halfway, no, he goes all the way. Last week, we talked about Gandalf as a Christ figure, being the prophet of the prophet, priest, and king, that Jesus fulfills all those roles, right? Well, this week, we are going to talk about the priest part of that. And Frodo Baggins is the high priest.
Ooh.
The Christ figure of the story as well. And we're looking at the whole entire story arc. Now, I want to talk a little bit, Brendan, I'm just going to rush through this. You use sound clips that I would use in order to make my points. And so what you went to one point, now I'm going to just take it all the way. Okay. And I want to talk about types and shadows. My very favorite thing about Bible study is types and shadows. I love the Old Testament. I love going through the Old Testament and finding those types and shadows, not the substance. When we're saying types and shadows, we're not talking about the substance itself. So if you're going to listen to me talk about Frodo being the high priest and the Christ figure, don't expect me to be laying out a solid case. This is where, and it's airtight, because you'll be able to look along the way and say, well, there, he failed right there in that role. No, shadows. So what we're looking at instead of substance is rather what is created when the light shines on the actual thing. The light in The Lord of the Rings is shining on Christ, and we are seeing on the ground against the wall, other than that object, we're seeing the shadow, and they point to the actual object. Am I making myself clear?
Yeah.
Okay. So in order to do this right, Brendan, we have to go back to Leviticus chapter 16. Everybody loves the book of Leviticus. It's exciting.
Not the law.
It's exciting, and it makes perfect sense to us here in 2015 America.
You know, I don't see why they haven't made a movie out of it.
Really?
Like, I mean, we've already got Genesis kind of sort of with Noah, like the first part.
Yeah.
And then we have Exodus, you know, blatantly. You know, just completely ripped out verbatim.
There you go.
From, you know, the source. Why not move on to Leviticus?
Well, and then, of course, you're going to get to chapter 16, and we're going to talk about the scapegoat. We're talking about the Day of Atonement offerings, Brendan. Mm-hmm. And that is, well, there's two goats. Okay, two goats. One is the sin offering, and it says specifically that is Yahweh's.
Dos cabras.
That is. Say that again.
Dos cabras.
Wow. That was good.
That was my nickname back in high school.
Oh, nice. Two goats.
Yeah.
The first one is God's. It's Yahweh's. And that one is going to die. The second one is for Azazel. Azazel. That one is going to be sent off. What is this?
Huh? Yeah, I'm looking at your note. That was the name of one of the demons.
Well, okay, so this word Azazel, we don't know exactly what this means. There are four possibilities that people point to. And so such as it being translatable as the go-away goat, or the goat that departs.
The goat that escapes.
Yes. Or it can also be, I think if you're looking at the Arabic language, it could be to banish or remove. That is like entire removal is what that word signifies. But the most common is the most common view, and I don't know that I believe this or not. I'm not a.
We could ask Screwtape.
Well, I guess we could. The most common view is that it is a proper name of a demon, perhaps even the devil himself. But it can also be translatable as the mighty goat, making or marking a close association with what they had back in those days, the goat demons of the desert. You know, superstition about, you know, the wilderness. You don't want to go out there. That's ruled by the goat demons and whatnot. It doesn't matter which, you pick whichever definition you want, they're all going to work right here when we get through with this. Okay, so the first goat is the Lord's, it's Yahweh's. That one is slaughtered, the blood is taken in and sprinkled on the mercy seat, right?
Yep.
The go-away goat, or the goat that departs, the scapegoat, the one that's being banished to remove, the one that's going to entirely remove, or even the one that's being sent to the devil, that one, the priest is going to lay his hands on the head of this goat outside the tabernacle, and he's going to confess the sins of the people of Israel. Now, this doesn't mean that he's going to confess that the people of Israel have sinned. What he's going to do is confess that the people of Israel are sinners. They're rebellious. They are rebels. Their propensity is to sin, right? Their propensity is to miss the mark. I'm shooting. I'm never hitting the bullseye. I'm shooting. I'm missing the mark. I'm sinning, not making it. And so we have to make sure that when we're talking about the Day of Atonement, that we understand that atonement doesn't, it's not synonymous with forgiveness. To make atonement doesn't mean to make forgiveness, Brendan. The root of the word means to cover over and to get back to your hero, yours and Darren Aronofsky. It was used when Noah covered the ark with pitch.
Yeah.
It's atoned. I mean, he was making atonement. Mm. Wow, you know what? I bet you could really dig deep into that and see a type in shadow as well.
That's pretty cool.
We'll do that later when we get to Noah.
Yeah.
Hey, there you go. Save that one.
We got to put that on the list.
Yes. So it is not, once again, it is not synonymous with
cinnamon.
Yes, with forgiveness. It's a, what it is, it's business. You're conducting business. You are paying a ransom. So in other words, if I came to you, Brendan, and I had a list of grievances with you, and you know, you
so like Seinfeld, we would have an airing of grievances.
Well, there you go. Okay. And got this list, and I say, you know what, I got this problem with you because you said this about Lord of the Rings trilogy movies and stuff, and you
I think
say
a lot of people would say that.
And but you made restitution, you fixed that, then blot that out, right?
You covered over with the atoning whiteout.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. That's what it is. And because there can be no forgiveness until business is made, the soul that sins shall surely die. Okay, that's just, it's a law. It's the deeper magic in Narnia. It's the rules, as Peter Kreeft said about, last week on the show.
It's the rule written by the secret fire?
Well, there you go.
Oh, man.
So anyway,
we're getting there.
These things have to be done. And so then we say, you know, just as, so it's paying a ransom, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many in Matthew chapter 20, verses 28. And ransom is specifically talking about, I mean, most specifically, slavery. I'm going to ransom you out of slavery. That's the word. That's making atonement. Okay. And so business has to take place. I just want to make sure that we're absolutely clear on that. Now, so Frodo, our hero, is the high priest. Okay. Just like Jesus is the high priest, because those two goats that were sacrificed both point to Christ. The one that gets killed and his blood is sprinkled on the altar is I don't want to get to the key text already. Oh no, I don't want to get to the key text already, but I'm going to do it.
You may have to.
I'm going to have to do it. John 1:29, friends, when you are watching the Two Towers with your buddies and you are sitting on your
double-decker couch,
this is what is going to go through your mind. John 1:29 of the New English Translation. John the Baptist said, "Look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." So Jesus is that first goat because he was killed on our behalf. That blood was used to cover over make a propitiation, right?
Yeah.
On the mercy seat to cover over. He's also, so, and then he rises again, and then he goes away as the scapegoat. That scapegoat took our sins on the cross, and then he goes, takes it away, takes it completely away, the go-away goat, the goat that departs to banish, to remove that sin, okay, because he's also the high priest that prayed over the scapegoat. What we have to make sure is that we have changed the we need to make sure that we're clear on this. We have changed the definition of scapegoat.
Yes, and okay. I don't know if you could tell that's what was running across my face
right
just then.
And I'm glad that's what I was reading.
Yeah.
Because in King James' day, scapegoat was talking about goats that get out of the fence. The escape goat, the escaped goat. That goat keeps going, keeps leaving. So we use scapegoat as somebody we're going to pin the blame on them.
Yes.
Okay. Jesus didn't get the blame pinned on him.
Okay.
Well, I get you can make that case, but what he specifically did was he took the sin away. That rebellion is what we're talking about. Because us as Christians, we don't want to rebel.
Right.
We want to do what's good. We are like Paul in that the things that I want to do, I don't do those.
I don't do those. And the things I don't want to do,
those are the very things I do.
Over and over again.
But we hate it.
Yeah.
People that are out of relationship with Christ, they don't hate it. Okay, so that's a very important distinction to be made. So let's just go ahead and throw it out there. Frodo has gone off into the wilderness, and he is going to face, who's he going to face? He's going to meet Sauron, okay, the goat demon in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Man, Brendan, if you were reading the books, you would see clearly that as the story goes along, it physically gets darker. And darker. It kind of shows it in the movie because it gets more black and whitish looking.
Yeah.
Whatever that.
Well, the closer you get to Mordor.
Right.
The further away you get from the Shire.
In the book, it gets dark.
Man, okay.
Because Frodo's going to meet the goat demon, if you want to use that definition of Azazel. Okay, but here's the thing. He's the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of Middle Earth. He's taking that ring of sin. That, you know why the ring is sin? Because it was forged by Sauron, because he wanted to rule everybody in God's stead. And that's one of the big points that Peter Kreift was bringing out of this trilogy, is that God is in it because everybody knows it's not right for him to play God, because there is a God, and he's not it. So, you know, that was a pretty profound point that he made. So anyway, here goes Frodo. The scapegoat, the go away goat, the goat that departs, that takes the sin of the world with him and goes out to face the goat demons in the wilderness. And here's the deal. You can see Isaiah chapter 53 playing out, and specifically verse 5. He was wounded because of our rebellious deeds. He was crushed because of our sin. He endured punishment that made us well. Because of his wounds, we have been healed. And throughout this whole film, you see it taking its toll. And it reminds me that of 2 Corinthians 5:20. God made the one who did not know sin to be sin for us, so that in him we would become the righteousness of God. And so here's what I'm seeing as he is degrading. Now, obviously, you can't say that, well, Jesus, when he became sin, he didn't give in to sin. But whatever was going on inside for those hours that he was suspended between heaven and earth on that cross, he was suspended. He didn't belong anywhere for that period of time. He wasn't on the earth. He wasn't in heaven. Okay. What was going on? What does it mean that he was becoming sin? He became sin during that time for us. I don't know.
Wow.
But I do see that Frodo looks like he's becoming sin, and so much so that it is just a burden.
Stop it! Leave him alone! Don't you understand? He's got to destroy it. That's where we're going. Into Mordor. To the Mountain of Fire.
Osgiliath is under attack. They call for reinforcements.
Please. It's such a burden. Will you not help him?
He's got to destroy it. He's going to destroy. And what did Christ do? Destroy death. What does that have to do with sin? The wages of sin is death. Okay, they're the same. They're the same. You can't have one without the other, as Frank Sinatra would sing. Okay,
oh, yeah.
Sin and death, sin and death.
Wait, I don't think
it's taking a burden on him. Can't you see that, Faramir? Let him go. Won't you help him? Let him go. And getting back. Getting back, Brendan, earlier in the film, I got to tack on to one of the clips that you played.
You're not eating. You barely sleep. It's taking a hold of you, Mr. Frodo. You have to fight it.
I know what I have to do, Sam. The ring was entrusted to me. It's my task. Mine. My own.
Can't you hear yourself? Don't you know who you sound like?
So again, just the torment of becoming that, because Frodo is becoming one with the ring. He's being overtaken by the ring like Gollum was.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's why you pointed out that he wants to meet with him. He wants to help him because he has to believe that he can be saved.
Yeah.
And I'm taking it a few steps further and saying that's what sin is. That's the sin that Christ bore on the cross.
Man.
So again,
we could just go on.
We could. Key verse, John 1:29. Look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. He literally took it away with him. Took it. Wow.
Ugh.
And that is, again, our sinful nature that we're pointing to. So when you're sitting on your
double-decker couch,
you can say, hey, looks like Frodo's kind of like a Christ figure in this film. What? There you go. That's how you start that conversation. Any questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks?
Well, eventually we want to do like a recap of these Middle-earth films.
So that we can look at it all in one. Yeah.
Yeah, after going through the fire, we can finally see what's happening. And I can just imagine one of the headlines being, same Christ, different figure. because I think, if I remember you correctly, you said that there would be a different Christ figure for every story, every film.
I hope so.
And I think I know where you're going next time, next week, which when we will finish this story. This
Lord
trilogy.
Willing.
Lord willing and the Cricks Don't Rise.
Yes.
So, same Christ, different figure.
There you go. Do we have any feedback this week, Brandon?
Man, as always, we are going back. Not that it's a burden, but we're going back to Ron's Red Oak Treehouse.
Because it's a pleasure.
Greetings and felicitations, Michael and Brendan, says Ron of the Red Oaks. I really enjoyed your latest podcast, FCC 40, Finding Christ in the Fellowship of the Ring. Truly, it made me long for the days of Middle Earth Minutes podcast. But that is a topic for another day.
There you go,
Michael. To me, one of the more human moments in the movie was when the company was lost in Moria, waiting for Gandalf to get his bearings. Sitting for a while, open parentheses, kind of like the disciple sitting at Jesus' feet, being taught, close parentheses. And we have this powerful statement from Gandalf. Quote, all we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us.
Yeah.
End quote. In the parable of the wise steward, Christ said something not unlike that, or rather that should be considered with it. To whomever much is given of him, much will be required. And to whom much was entrusted to him, more will be asked. And that's in Luke 12:48. And just a real side note, I really wanted to use Luke 12:47. I did. No, that was the key text because that's the same parable.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I think we're on the same page. I hope so.
Yeah.
As a Christian, I am reminded to be about my Father's business and not wasting time with unprofitable things. Open parentheses, GCM podcast, do not fall in that category. Thanks, Ron.
Yeah, thank you.
Like the steward, we will all one day give an account for ourselves. Jesus makes his message heard to us and says, now it is up for you to decide what to do with the time that is given you. At the same time, Gandalf gave us that sage advice. He admonishes... Oh, hold on. Give me that mulligan.
Oh, mulligan?
Okay. Yeah.
It's your fourth one this year.
At the same time... Now, see, there you go, keeping a record of my wrongs.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
I said that.
Okay. At the same time, Gandalf gave us that sage advice. He admonishes Frodo. Many that live deserve death, says Gandalf, and some that die deserve life. Can you give it to them? Give it to them? Then do not be too eager to deal out death in judgment. Oh, man.
You know what? I brought that up in a recent podcast. Well, it was last year sometime, and I have no idea what episode it was. And it's killing me. Now I have to go through all the show notes.
Okay. I know, right?
excellent points.
This is such an excellent reminder, continues Ron, that God is in control and sees the evil in this world, but stays his hand of judgment.
Why? Because he is long-suffering. He doesn't wish that any should perish, but all should come to everlasting life. What a good God.
And just to piggyback off of you,
yeah,
let me translate that into how Lecrae would put it.
Okay.
Did we waste the time he get? Wait, hold on. Scratch that. Mulligan.
Oh, my goodness. An abuser.
Let me translate into how Lecrae would say that. Did we tick him off by... Did we tick him, capital H, did we tick him off by wasting all of these ticks on this clock? Or is he graciously giving me time to give him my heart?
Mm.
I think that's...
Yes, long-suffering.
Yeah, he is.
Because the clock keeps ticking.
Yeah, it does. And he allows it to tick.
Yep.
To
he is not time. Lax.
No. Back to Ron, though. But he stays his hand of judgment, which we also have benefited from when we were in the grasp of sin, just as Gollum was ensnared.
Hey, put the emphasis where it belongs, which we also have benefited from when we were grasp of sin, just as Gollum is ensnared by the power of the ring. I really hope that this made sense, says Ron, and of course it
does. Of course it does. Kind regards, Ron of the Red Oaks. Ron, you can do it every time.
Yay! And of course that is patron saint, Ron of the Red Oaks. Man, love it when he feeds back. Feeds back? When he gives us feedback.
When he feeds us back.
Back. I don't know. Are you ready for some real news?
Roll it! All right, Michael, coming off the hype of the Golden Globes, which were this past Sunday. By the way, this was my first year live tweeting the Golden Globes or any award ceremony, and it was pretty fun.
Wow. Did you ever send out any tweets that said
potatoes?
No, but I'll make a point to do it this this February 22nd when the Oscars are held.
Told you he was Trixie.
That's right, Gollum. I am Trixie. Now here you go, Michael. Grand Budapest Hotel and Birdman are tied for the same number of nominations.
Wow, how many?
Both at 9.
Wow.
Yes. Boyhood comes in second with 8. The Imitation Game. The Imitation Game comes in second with 8. Boyhood and American Sniper come in third with 6 nominations. Interstellar, Foxcatcher, Whiplash, and The Theory of Everything. First of all, have you heard of Whiplash?
No.
Okay, apparently Whiplash is... It's a movie. It's a story about this music teacher that motivates his students through, quote, fear and trembling. So, and I saw just like a brief trailer when they announced the nominations this morning.
Yeah.
A brief trailer. And, you know, the actor J.K. Simmons, you know who that is, right?
Nope.
Okay. In the first Spider-Man trilogy, he is, I can't think of his name, but he's the head honcho at the newspaper.
Oh, okay. Jameson.
James Jameson, yes. Yeah. That's J.K. Simmons.
Oh, okay. I like him.
Yes, and he's good. And in this trailer, he's in a little conservatory rehearsal room. You know, the music class is in front of him. And then he picks up a chair, throws it at the brass section.
Whoa!
Yeah. Or it looked like the brass section. I'm not sure what it was. I was more focused on the chair. I'm going to be honest. I didn't really care what section it landed in. But that looks interesting. Now, Foxcatcher, have you heard about that?
I don't think so.
Apparently, it's this wrestling movie. Not like, you know, World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah. I have heard of that one.
Steve Carell.
Yes.
Yes, that one.
Yes. Okay. He's like a weird rich guy.
Yeah.
And he's wanting to get an Olympic medal under his belt or something.
Yeah, something like that. And he's training.
It's Steve Carell in makeup, heavy makeup and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, he looks weird, but honestly, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
But those four, Interstellar, Foxcatcher, Whiplash, and Theory of Everything, you know, the Stephen Hawking movie.
Right.
They are at fourth place, each with 5 nominations. And then Mr. Turner, I have not heard anything about Mr. Turner. I don't know. That has 4 nominations. Into the Woods has 3. And then Unbroken has 3.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Only 3 for those 2, huh?
Yeah.
So when are we going to find out?
We'll find out everything on February 22nd.
All right. Pick a little toggle, pick a little toggle, cheek, 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 talk a lot, take a little more. From the rumor mill, firstshowing.net, will the web slinger join Marvel Universe for Avengers Infinity War? Remember the big Sony Pictures hack that happened last year, Brendan?
Yes.
Yeah, well, many things were revealed that shouldn't have been. One is that Marvel Studios had been in talks with Sony about getting Spider-Man back in the family, so to speak. Right? Because they don't have the rights to be doing that stuff. Well, namely, what they're talking about is to get Peter Parker to appear in Captain America Civil War, seeing as how he's an integral part of that storyline. But alas, those talks fell through. Uh-huh. Though, Spidey could have a cameo, so we'll see. However, Latino Review, of course, is saying, because they get all the good stuff, is saying that Spider-Man will enter the Marvel Cinematic Universe in The Avengers Infinity War Part 1. Apparently, explanation as how all this makes sense in the scheme of Phase 3 is filled with many much spoilers. So if you want to read more about that, follow the link that we'll have in the show notes. Otherwise, take all this rumor with a giant grain of salt and look for The Avengers Infinity War Part 1 in the soon-to-be new magic year of 2018! Pretty soon that's going to just start ramping up, 2018.
Yeah.
We'll be echoing that for many much podcasts.
Many much.
Yes.
I love that. I love that.
I took that from Brian Regan.
Anyway, okay. Well, first of all, just a quick side note. Are you excited for the year 2020? Because won't that be the year of hindsight?
Oh, no.
Oh, I still got to tell you about that pun competition. Oh, man. We'll get to that in the lightning round. Don't you worry. Okay. So, Alfred Hitchcock to be remade by David Fincher, Ben Affleck, and Gillian Flynn.
Those 3 guys are going to remake Alfred Hitchcock? What are they going to take parts from each of
them? Well, first of all, Gillian Flynn is a woman.
Oh, okay.
She is the author of Gone Girl.
Okay.
And which, of course, David Fincher directed, Ben Affleck starred in, and Gillian actually wrote the screenplay for the film that just came out, which, by the way, we'll need to add to the list.
Is that... the Gone Girl.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, these guys are reuniting not for the Gone Girl sequel, but for an Alfred Hitchcock remake.
Huh?
Yes, and apparently this film, with a working title, Strangers, is going to be a modern adaptation of Strangers on a Train.
All right.
Now, this is where... Hold on, let me get here. This is where in the original film, a tennis star, which would be played in this adaptation by Ben Affleck, a tennis star...
Batfleck.
Batfleck. He meets a charming stranger on a train who turns out to be a psychopath.
Good.
Now.
That's always fun.
Like I said, this powerhouse trio, Fincher would be directing, Flynn would be drafting the screenplay, Affleck will be acting in it. It looks pretty good, and judging from the critical reception of Gone Girl that we've seen already, and when we review it ourselves, we'll get to experience that. I'm kind of excited for it. Now, Strangers on a Train isn't that popular of a Hitchcock film.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it.
See, yeah, exactly. It's not Tippi Hedren.
Yeah, the birds.
Or James Stewart. It's not that kind of
right.
Hitchcock. It's more of the, I don't know, what kind of tone? It's like a mystery
what
tone.
What about the 29 Steps?
No, the 39 Steps.
I thought it was 29.
39. Trust me, I've seen the play.
I have it on VHS.
Man, I'm telling you, it's 39.
And that's a great movie. Have you watched the movie?
I haven't watched the movie.
Oh, man, that's a good one.
You need to see the Broadway show.
Okay.
It's turned into...
What are the 39 steps? Do they do that?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. But I'm only laughing because it's been turned into a comedy.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, Michael, you don't understand. It's the best show ever.
Okay, well, we really went off the rails there.
So anyway, more...
Did you get my pun?
On the train, I got it, Michael. I'm trying to bring it back in.
Oh, okay.
More on this story as it develops.
Oh. All right. Hey, anything coming out this week on Blu-ray, DVD, any of that good stuff?
Well, of course, we've got Lucy, Scarlett Johansson, Morgan Freeman.
Oh. Is that one that we can do for a show? You did a Monday movie review.
Yeah. And I think it's got enough. How does Luther Hags put it in The Ghost of Mr. Chicken? It's got enough spunk.
Okay. Okay.
We can do that.
Good.
It's got the Box Trolls. I never saw it, but I heard a lot about it. I heard it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's one of those new animation.
Right. Computer stop animated. Motion and.
Yeah. Annabelle, which I'm not touching. I'm sorry.
I don't know anything about
Annabelle,
it.
Annabelle, it's about the. It's a scary movie. About the red-haired doll.
I'm bored with scary movies.
See, exactly. Well,
I'm done with them.
Okay, anyway. And then something that kind of came out of nowhere. It's another independent film with the late James Gandolfini.
Oh.
Called The Drop.
I think that I've seen a preview for that before it came out. Was that being touted as his final film or something?
No, it wasn't, actually. His final film was being what's called Enough Said.
Okay.
In which he starred with Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Okay. Okay.
But
so it's a Seinfeld remake?
Now, hold on. First of all, no.
Okay.
Anyway, but no, I'm excited, and I hope I get the chance to see The Drop before it like disappears off the face of the planet, because it looks pretty good.
Well, it's coming out on DVD.
Oh, good. I can watch it at home.
Yeah. Hey, now time for a quick rundown of the articles posted on the Finding Christ in Cinema Facebook page this past week at facebook.com/Christ in Cinema.
Hey, here's Brendan's review of Selma.
Hey, I heard of that.
That's a good one. Got a whale of a tale for you, lads, but you'll have to wait. In the Heart of the Sea is delayed.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that made me sad, too, because when I went to go see Selma, there was a trailer for Into the Sea. And In the Heart of the Sea, there was a trailer for it, and I loved it.
Yeah.
It's the trailer we've already talked about.
Yeah.
But seeing it on the big screen.
Yes.
Oh, and then the whale.
Oh. Yep. Well, they're going to be sad, too, because they're pushing it back to come out a week before Star Wars Episode 7.
Hey, at least it's a week before.
So they'll get 1 week. After. Potentially, they'll get 1 week's worth of views.
Yes. Oh, man. Okay, moving on. First of Avatar sequels delayed until 2017. That's okay. Take your time, Mr. Cameron.
Please.
Now, wait a minute. That's a good... Avatar's a good movie.
You just set me up for a Henny Youngman line. Thank you.
George Lucas was already working on the new Star Wars trilogy before Disney thought it was cool.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Carbon copy Michael GCTN.
He said, I'd rather raise my daughter.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah.
Hey,
you guys 70, and you just had a daughter. Well, yeah, just
at 70?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Of course, the new Avengers trailer.
Oh,
Michael,
you didn't like it.
I'm sorry. It's
come
just
on.
They're using the same footage.
Not
from
all of it.
50% of it.
No.
Yes, 50%
okay,
of it.
I'll give you that.
I don't see that as a new. I can't do it.
Okay.
Okay.
Every party has a
trooper. And honestly, we're back at Anakin Skywalker being in 90 minutes in heaven.
Wow.
It was really short.
There wasn't a whole lot of good stuff going on. But, well, anyway, we'll take it. Again, you can get all those extra news articles on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Christ in Cinema. The lightning round! Brendan, the 2015 Podcast Awards are opening up for nominations on the 15th of January.
You mean today?
Yes, starting on January 15th, 2015, the main page at podcastawards.com. Please put a link in the show notes on the down there in the news.
I would do that right now.
There will be it's open for nominations. There will be an entry for each category. Please note that you only get to fill this nomination ballot out one time. If you leave categories blank, you cannot go back later and submit those additional categories a second time. Please nominate individual shows in an individual show in each category. So, I have never in my life, I've been podcasting since 2006. That's almost, I mean, we're moving on 10 years for me. I've never asked people to nominate any shows that that I have ever done, and I've done a boatload of them. However, because we are doing our best to fulfill the Great Commission here at the Great Commission Transmission Network and getting people acquainted with heavenly things and Christian things, we're going to ask you to go over to podcastawards.com and nominate, you know, whatever is your, you know, what shows you want to nominate. But I would suggest to start off with either The Theonauts or Finding Christ in Cinema. Those are my two suggestions.
Hey, yeah.
So, you know, and maybe if you can convince some friends to help out in that nomination process, if at the very least, if we can get either one of those shows on the list, and it doesn't matter which one because they both were brothers, so it benefits everybody. Yep. Right? You know, it would just be nice to bring one of the shows or both of the shows to the attention of the people that run the podcast awards over there. And it is a pretty neat thing. So, again, starting now, okay, go over to podcastawards.com.
So, Michael, this whole episode, I've been building up this big pun competition that I entered.
And yeah.
I submitted my 10 best puns.
Uh-huh.
And can you believe it? Not one pun, one. No pun intended.
That's good. Now, what's the truth?
No pun intended.
What?
Out of the 10 puns that I submitted, no pun intended.
Well, better luck next time.
I know, right?
That's your lightning round?
Yeah.
Okay.
Although I do relish the fact that you mustered the courage to catch up with me.
In what?
In my punnage.
Pun! I like to have pun.
Yeah, we're a punny show.
Right. What are we, what's our listener participation here this week? I wonder.
Well, we want to know what Christian themes, what Christian tools you guys have found in The Two Towers. And honestly, we're doing the trilogy for a reason. We want to go ahead and get it out of the way. But not just to sweep it up out of the...
Because it's being added to our canon, and now we can always draw.
Yes.
That's one of the neat things about all the movies that we have done before. It's always that pool to draw from.
Yep.
Draw out, you know, a cup of water if you need to borrow something from, you know, from Inkheart or Braveheart or any of the other hearts.
Any of the other hearts.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
And, you know... Obviously, what are we doing next week, Michael? Return of the King, let's just be honest.
Yes, we are. And somebody's calling and leaving a message on the answer machine over there.
How dare they?
How dare they during the show? You know, and I thought that the funny thing is that we didn't hear this. I didn't hear that, did you?
No.
Why do I have that answering machine in the studio? That way we can say, hello, hi. Yeah, we're doing a show right now. Yeah, Finding Christ in Cinema. Yeah, you go to ChristInCinema.com. We just talked about The Two Towers, the second of the Lord of the Rings films. Oh, man. It was great so far. It'll be available tomorrow morning, Friday morning, bright and early. Okay. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, don't call again during showtime. Okay, bye-bye, love. Okay. So anyhow, yes, next week we are talking Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. Going to finish up this series. And Brendan, have you watched it yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, boy. No,
I don't want... Return of the King tainting my mindset for this episode that we're doing right now. I want to keep it fresh
yes
for the next one.
Well, you come back here next week, and we'll talk about it right here on Finding Christ in Cinema. We're part of the Great Commission Transmission Network, using new media and social networking to equip and encourage you to go into all the world and proclaim the good news to everyone. To find out more and to partner with us, visit us at gctnetwork.com/donate. Visit us on our website for links to all the social things that we do, all the podcast episodes. You can download them all. You can subscribe to the podcast in any of the podcatchers of your choice. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that other good stuff at ChristInCinema.com. Or if you're old-fashioned and want to do like Ron of the Red Oaks, send us an email to FCC@GCTNetwork.com.
You can call us up on the voice line at 507-407-GCTN. And for those of you who don't have potatoes on your phones...
Potatoes!
That's 507-407-4286.
I told you he was tricksy.
Now, let's say you're traveling through Middle Earth, and you got a good hankering for a podcast.
One does not simply walk into Mordor.
Oh, of course not.
Without Sean, a podcast.
Of course not, Sean Bean. We don't simply walk into Mordor without Finding Christ in Cinema on your favorite podcatcher.
Well, I don't like falafel.
So you can find us on iTunes, you can find us on Stitcher, and you can find us at TuneIn Radio by searching the stores for Finding Christ in Cinema.
Well-mannered frivolity.
And for all the shows that we produce here at the Great Commission Transmission Network, including our brothers over there at the Theonauts Podcast, get over to the official website at gctnetwork.com. Brendan Taylor, anything else?
I told you he was tricksy.
Come on, stop trying to hit me and hit me.
And that is a wrap.
It's ghastly.
Yeah, cut to it.
Dabbling, bumbling band of baboons.
Love duct tape.
What a bunch of hippie dippy baloney.
Double decker couch.
Sentimental hogwash.
Inconceivable.
I don't understand.
It's a madhouse. A madhouse.
Potatoes.
I told you he was tricksy.
Potatoes.
I told you he was tricksy.
Potatoes.
I told you he was tricksy.
Potatoes.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission. This is your Great Commission transmission.
At GCTNetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission. This is your Great Commission transmission.
One does not simply walk into Mordor.